Thank you everyone for coming. I have to use the microphone because this presentation is webcast. Very happy to have with us today TELUS's management team. So Dave has been with the company since 2004, I believe. He's Executive Vice President and President of TELUS Consumer and Small Business Solutions. And we have also with us Robert Mitchell, Director of Investor Relations. So if you have any questions following the presentation or follow-up questions after, please direct them to Robert or to myself, and we'll try to get you the answers as quickly as possible. I'm very happy to have you guys here because TELUS has been quite successful in their deployment strategy for capital, in my view, having used the low interest rate environment to deploy fiber in your footprint, and now you're positioned with a declining CapEx profile in a potentially rising rate environment, which sounds the right way to go from a free cash flow perspective. And hopefully the fiber to the home deployment that you did is gonna start kicking in and you get the returns that you're expecting on that investment, which we'll be covering in the presentation. But Dave, just before, to start the ball rolling here, maybe you can tell us about, what's driving the strong performance for the company, what drove the performance in 2017 overall, and how do you see 2018 shaping up compared to 2017 for wireless and wireline, just a general view.
Okay, well, thanks very much for having me here today. So in terms of your first question, we did have a very strong 2017 across both subscriber metrics as well as bottom line and top line performance. And we see 20, as you can tell from our guidance, we see 2018 being very consistent in terms of similar growth numbers. In terms of what drove it, at TELUS, everything we do is centered around the customer experience and doing whatever we need to do to make sure we drive the best customer experience in the industry, and I think that's reflected in our, by a significant degree, our industry leading churn rates and highest customer loyalty. So for us, customer experience is broader than just customer service. It obviously starts with customer service, and we do everything we can to make sure we have a leading customer service and a leading Net Promoter Score, or what we call likelihood to recommend. But it extends as well through to network and network investments, right? So, if you start on the wireless side, we have the largest and fastest LTE network in the country. And that's not just something we can say, it's backed up by awards. So if you look last year, we won J.D. Power's Ookla, Open Signal, basically four major, industry awards awarded TELUS, largest and fastest or highest quality in the case of J.D. Power's. That was recently reaffirmed again with Open Signal as recently as January. We have, the best wireless network out there. And as you already pointed out, we're the most advanced on a relative basis as a percentage of our footprint in our fiber to the home build. We've been at fiber to the home now for, many years. In Q1 of this year, we finished last year roughly at about 48% of our optic or TV qualified footprint was covered by fiber to the home. Sometime this quarter we'll cross the 50% barrier. So we're more than halfway there. What we see as a significant kind of 5-year main part of the build getting done in 5 years, and we're through to the halfway point. So it starts with customer service, it extends through to our investment in networks, and closes out with just generally the culture of the company. Like at TELUS, literally everybody has 50% of their objectives tied in one way, shape, or form back to the customer.
So, and that's everybody in the company, whether you're in a, you know, obviously a frontline position would have that, but that extends through to, you know, finance, legal, tech strategy, you know, all aspects of the company. So that means we've got, you know, our entire organization constantly thinking about what can they do to improve the customer experience, make it easier to do business. And the last thing I'd point out, I guess, would be significant investments in digital as well, as our both our client base and our industry and business drive more towards a digital-first proposition that's becoming integrally important and an integral element of our customers-first approach. On an underlying basis, when you get into kind of wireless and the fixed side of the business, you know, all of the kind of core drivers that have driven our success for the last number of years are still there, and we're still seeing, you know, significant data growth in the wireless space as customers continue to use more and more data, you know, drive to LTE advanced and faster phones, drives more data as well. And on the wireline side, similar types of dynamics as people take advantage of that fiber to the home footprint. You know, we're constantly seeing people step up in terms of speeds and speed tiers they want into the home. They're using more data as well. You know, roughly in both sides of our business, we're seeing data consumption, you know, in our network grow, you know, a double basically every, you know, 12 to 18 months. And that's not abating. Continued very strong growth in Optik TV as we continue to grow our share in that space and, you know, what is a leading edge TV product, and we believe the best TV product in the country.
That's a good way to start. Maybe we can just drill down in
sure.
the two segments and try to see more the drivers. So when you look at wireless, you know, we've seen continued growth in subscribers year after year after year in Canada. It doesn't look like it's coming shortly to an end, and it's helping all the players. But what's your view on the sustainability going forward? We've seen really strong growth in subscribers. How does it look like in 2018 compared to 2017 for subscriber growth?
So a lot of the underlying trends that are, you know, have been driving that growth, we see continuing through 2018. I mean, it's obviously not going to continue, you know, forever. But, you know, when you step back and look at what happened through 16 and definitely 17, it's, you know, Canada continues to, you know, have strong immigration growth, you know, driving just the population growth across the country. You know, we're continuing to see, you know, more and more families adopt more and more devices inside the home. And that is both, you know, adding a line to family share plans as, you know, their children get older and they add, you know, cellular devices to, or smartphones to the plan, but it's also extending into, you know, tablets and more and more homes having connected tablets, connected cars. And you know, other products and services in the home and in and about the home and in the workplace continuing to be added into, you know, the wireless network. All of those things together are driving, you know, continued strong subscriber growth for the industry as a whole, and TELUS is absolutely participating in that and seeing, you know, continued growth in that space as well. You know, will that go on forevermore? Likely not. I mean, we do see for the foreseeable future continued penetration growth in the marketplace, you know, for certainly in 18 and 19 and going forward. So
you've been quite rational in terms of pricing on wireless, but you can't let irrational pricing around you make you lose
share.
So yeah. You had to react to some irrational pricing in December that took place in your area. Can you talk about what's the takeaway from all that, what we saw happen in Q4 in terms of, does it change the dynamic going forward? Are you worried that another time we could see another promotion of that kind come up or the players probably learn some of the lessons that don't rock the boat when
Oh, I, you know, short answer is I don't know. I can't control what my competition do. You're right. We will react, you know, as needed, and make sure we're not in a position to lose share. I mean, even if you look at what happened with that, you know, the promotion you're likely referring to is the 10 gig, $60 promotion that happened in December. It started in the West, and then, you know, moved from there into a national market, because we're not going to, you know, allow promotions that aggressive to happen only in Western Canada, right? So, you know, will we see it come back? I honestly don't know. You know, I think in terms of lessons learned around that, you know, what's very clear is Canadians have a high appetite for more and more data, right? So I think you're going to continue to see big data plans expand more and more, you know, large data buckets. You know, I think more so in a family sharing environment, and that plan was single subscriber only, it wasn't shared data. And I think you're gonna see, you know, certainly, you know, TELUS, you know, our focus is more around shared data and shared data plans. We think that's more on strategy. You know, this concept of more for more and larger data buckets, I think is completely, you know, consistent with what consumers want. You know, they do want to see, you know, and use more and more data as they get more and more devices. The devices themselves get faster. Mobile video becomes more prevalent and whatnot. So, you know, in terms of that specific plan, you know, I think it, clearly it caused a lot of demand in a very short period of time, which caused for some of our competitors some issues. You know, we, you know, TELUS did well on a, you know, subscriber standpoint in terms of growth. I mean, if you saw our quarterly growth in Q4 was very strong. It was up almost 40% on a year-over-year basis to about 121,000 postpaid net adds. So we had a good quarter, and that was a contributor towards it from a growth standpoint. But you also had re-rate within your own customer base, because a number of our existing customers took that plan. So, you know, I think financially it's a bit of a wash, but you know, certainly, you know, we'll continue to, it's going to continue to be a very competitive market. I mean, it has been through Q1, there's been numerous, you know, countless actually promotions that have been launched through Q1 as, you know, all the different players, you know, continue to want to drive growth. We'll, you know, remain very reactive to, you know, the, you know, promotions that are in the marketplace, whether they come from, you know, any one of our competitors. You know, we'll take it, you know, week by week, day by day, as things progress. But I don't expect on a whole 2018 to be that much more promotionally aggressive than 2017 was. 2017 was already pretty promotionally aggressive. You know, most of the promotions continue to be focused as they have been in the past around kind of device promotions, right? So in terms of increased subsidy, lowering the price of you know, the iconic smartphones, which continue themselves to kind of go up and up and up price, right? Like you look at, you know, every time a new player launches a new price phone, it comes in at a, you know, even higher price point, you know, culminating last year with the iPhone 10, which is a, you know, it's a great device, but a very expensive device from a Canadian consumer standpoint, right? So that's putting a lot of pressure on subsidy price points as, you know, price points in store for the device, you know, to walk out, start even on contract, start to get higher and higher and higher. And much higher than they were, say, 3-4 years ago. You know, I think it's, you know, one of the benefits TELUS has, and that we continue to focus on, you know, the reason we focus on, you know, religiously around the customer experience is to make sure we drive that, you know, we attract the best customers, have the highest ARPU, and most importantly, have the lowest churn. That drives a lifetime revenue for us that's, you know, up to 55% higher than our competitors, right? That's huge in an environment where you've got, you know, inflationary pressure on the cost of acquisition and cost of retention, because we can afford to invest more to get a customer up front because they stay with us a lot longer, right? And so, you know, that's a dynamic we like and something we focus on. And even when you do get extremely promotional, like we, you know, like happened in December, you know, being the churn leader means you generally win environments like that, because if you have the highest loyalty in the industry, basically what that means is you have more of your customer base that's interested in taking that plan but staying with you, and less of your customer base that's interested in shopping around and going elsewhere, right? So The benefit of being that churn leader, that highest loyalty in the business, is that as things get more and more promotional, it drives more shoppers in the marketplace, but we're going to have less of those shoppers in the marketplace because of the loyalty back into TELUS. And we can attract others that come to join TELUS, but have less of our own customers who are keen on leaving and going to a competitor.
That's a good segue into my question on Shaw, because everybody points to TELUS as potentially being potentially losing market share if Shaw is successful in their growth strategy in wireless, because they're based in Western Canada, because they're going to be going head-to-head against you in wireless, but also on cable. So can you talk about what you've seen so far from your experience with Shaw? Have they changed the dynamic of the market? Are you seeing them more often, losing customers, your own customers to them? You're porting, basically, to Shaw. Has it increased? And how do you operate in that market?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I assume you're talking mostly on the wireless side.
Yes, wireless.
Right now. Yeah. So I would say, so far we've seen really not much of a change at all in the last, couple of years. Why? That's, we've been competing against Freedom now for, 7 years? And Shaw, has not launched Shaw Mobility or Shaw Wireless or whatever it is they're going to call it, under their own brand. So in Western Canada and in Eastern Canada, you've got Freedom, but Freedom is a standalone brand. It's not connected back into Shaw, at least the best we can tell. And Shaw's not yet, doing bundling in a big way because it's not under their brand, right? Presumably they're, building out their network and the quality of their network before they launch into the wireless space under a Shaw brand. You can ask them. But we're not exactly sure what their plans are. But what I can tell you right now is in terms of in-market, what we're competing against is the same thing we're competing against in Ontario, which is Freedom Wireless, we've not seen a significant change in terms of porting or customers that we're losing out to them in Freedom vis-a-vis what we're losing to them in Ontario. It's been consistent and something that we think we can continue to compete well against. Our network quality significantly better, distribution quality significantly better, and so we like the value mix that we've got vis-a-vis Freedom right now. What happens when they launch Shaw Wireless, Shaw Mobility, whatever it is it's going to be called under the Shaw brand, and remains to be seen in terms of at what price point, what's the bundle, what does it look like, how's it marketed, how's it, what's the distribution set up, and whatnot. We don't know that because it's not happened yet, right?
There's still a lot of variables we don't know about.
Yeah, I mean, what we do know is we've known this is coming for a long time, so we're preparing for it. We have a long history of competing effectively and well with Shaw. We have a lot of respect for Shaw. They're a good organization, as such, we're making sure we're as prepared as we possibly can be in terms of protecting our base, protecting our customers. Again, it drives back to remaining customer focused on both not just wireless but wireline to make sure we have as happy customers as we possibly can in Western Canada. When they do launch into Western Canada, yes, they'll be competing against us in two provinces, Alberta and BC, that we traditionally have, a strong presence in. But we do have the advantages there, actually, of having a lot of bundled customers, right? So I know the kind of, general wisdom is that we would be impacted the most. On the other hand, by definition, the customers that are going to be most exposed are customers that are standalone wireless customers. And we have far fewer of those customers that only have one product with us being wireless than our competition does in Western Canada, who, by definition, because they're not a wireline player, don't have bundled customers, right? So We'll see how it all plays out when it comes down, but it's a bit hard to tell yet. For your average consumer in Canada, it's actually the same now as it's been for a period of time. They've got different rate plans and whatnot in market, but not remarkably so. When you look at the Freedom Network itself and their big gig plans, there's a lot of data in those plans, but they're on a relatively small network, right, at the end of the day. And the amount of roaming data that they have when they go off net is still quite small, right? So we're able to compete effectively against that.
If you were to look at your experience in Quebec with Vidéotron, what are the ad, the qualities that could be different, or the competitive dynamic in Quebec could be different than what you might see in Western Canada? Are there differences that, because everybody is currently anticipating the same type of growth for Shaw in their wireless plans versus what Quebecor has achieved, and people are making the similarities visible in their forecasts. Are there differences that could make the outcome different?
First of all, there's a lot of similarities, right? I presume they're going to take a very similar approach to market, and I think they've publicly stated they plan on taking a similar approach to market that Vidéotron has in terms of, a strong bundling focus around, getting their wireline customers to add wireless to their bundle. Again, we don't know exactly what their plans are going to be. What are the differences between the two markets? I think the biggest difference is the level of competition that exists. If you look at Rogers in particular, has a very strong network and base, particularly in BC, much stronger than they historically would have had in Quebec against Vidéotron, where Vidéotron was really facing off against Bell to a large degree. Shaw is going to be facing off against multiple players that have higher share in those Western provinces than Rogers in particular would have had in Quebec when
so more at stake.
At stake and just a more fierce competitive environment.
Yeah, more reactive,
I think, right?
Probably.
I think the other key difference too is Shaw is operating a wireless network in Western Canada, but also in Ontario, right? And the majority of the Freedom subscribers are in Ontario, right? So Vidéotron didn't have that, right? Like they could afford to and did focus exclusively on a singular province, that laser focus on doing well in Quebec in their home province, I think is an advantage that Shaw doesn't have, because Shaw can't afford to lose track of or take their eye off the ball in Ontario and focus exclusively on the West. So. They've got a few more challenges than Vidéotron have, but they have a lot of strengths that Vidéotron had to bring to the market. So I think, in terms of approach, you'll see it be somewhat similar, but there's some unique challenges that they're going to face that others, here's another one, which is just like the footprint they have to cover, because they've got to do Ontario, Alberta, and BC, is much more expansive and significant than one province in Quebec, right? So they've just got, as they look to build out a network, and a high quality network to compete, they've got more, square kilometers they've got to cover than Vidéotron did, right? So it's going to require more capital and more time to invest in. They've got to drive out a bigger distribution footprint across, again, three provinces instead of just, one. Again, a challenge. And then the other, factor in there too is just that, Vidéotron has a very, strong footprint in a French language market, deep content, portfolio, and again, in a French language market, Shaw doesn't, have to the same extent in English Canada. So there's a lot of similarities, but there's some differences as well. So.
That's helpful. Any questions on wireless before we turn? Just on 5G, my last question on 5G is, we heard yesterday from Tony at Rogers, he was talking about his plans for 5G, and he was kind of saying that there has been a pull in terms of in the deployment of 5G as people start to get tests done, and you see the technology performing, you get you know, kind of pulling forward the investment cycle. When do you think we'll see that CapEx spend on 5G start to really ramp up? And what are the potential impacts on ARPU growth and from 5G at this point that you see?
Yeah, so I mean, I think mainstream 5G, is still out in the 2020 timeframe, right? Before you start to see it widely available in chipsets in, the majority of smartphones that customers are going to buy, it's at least 2020, I believe. You'll see, Telus has been very active in 5G, both in pilots and trials, and are working with our partners. We did a number of tests last year that demonstrated, five times, six times, seven times, the sorts of speeds you can get in the highest LTE environments. So we're excited about it. In terms of the CapEx side of things, we've actually been pulling forward the CapEx investment for many years now, right? Remember, as you roll out 5G, one of the key characteristics of a 5G network is microcell, right? And you end up with, instead of, in a given community, 10 macro cell networks, you might end up with, 70, 100, many more than that, microcells, right? So to be able to, basically lay out way more cell sites in a given community, they all need to be backhaul with fiber. So there's a massive synergy, and one of the reasons why we, so aggressively attacked, driving fiber to the home and fiber to the premise in Western Canada was we believed there were very strong synergies between that and the eventual fiber network we would have to build to support a 5G network eventually, because we need, if you've got, fiber going down a street to the home, the benefit is then also it's also going to, all of the street posts in that community, and as you put microcells up in the community, you've already actually done your fiber deployment. So we don't actually see a massive bulge of, CapEx spend that's required to support 5G, because we've actually been investing much of the core point around civils and fiber in the ground already, and just need to really do the RAN deployment as that equipment becomes available. So we're very well prepared, we believe, in conjunction with our network sharing partner, because Bell's been doing a similar fiber footprint layout in the areas of the country where they're driving out our shared network. We believe we're well, positioned on that front. We're doing a lot of technology trials. Will it get brought forward to a significant degree? I think you'll see fixed mobile versions of 5G, right? So to replace that kind of last mile and where it's really replacing a home internet connection, actively getting deployed, later in 2018 and definitely in 2019. But in terms of widespread mobile adoption, where it's your smartphone and your day-to-day devices, your tablet and whatnot are all operating in a 5G environment, I don't think current industry view is you'll start to see that coming out in chipsets that are widely available and more in the 2020, maybe even 2021 timeframe, right? So some carriers in the U.S. will try to bring it forward for sure. AT&T and Verizon will bring it forward, but I think that'll be on kind of custom phones that, as opposed to your iconic phones like an iPhone or the latest Galaxy, right?
So 5G deployment and
what's critical?
Declining CapEx are not mutually exclusive to Telus, right?
No,
from
no.
what you see. So
no.
the trend, we could still see CapEx trending lower as 5G is being deployed.
We believe it can be absorbed. I mean, we're constantly investing into our wireless network anyway in terms of, cell densification and whatnot. So, we don't believe that it's a significant, bulge that we see ahead. I mean, there will be spectral purchases, right, outside of capital as spectrum becomes available. And that's got to be a key enabler. The rest of the world is very quickly centralizing in on 3,500 megahertz as the kind of, go-to spectrum for mobile deployments around 5G. We're currently working with the government on the 600 megahertz spectrum auction, which is next, but we've, as a country, we need to get the 3,500 megahertz spectrum, redeployed for mobile use. There's not yet a date for that, and that'll be a rate limiter because most of the initial, when it does come available in chipsets and in mobile phones, it looks like almost certainly is going to become available on 3,500 megahertz spectrum, as the first deployments. And in Canada, none of the carriers in Canada are big enough to kind of drive chipset deployment in smartphones, right? Like we get banded on the same bands that get deployed in North America and the US in particular, right? Those are the phones, or possibly Europe. And it looks like all of the initial deployments of 5G are gonna be in 3500. So it'll be important to get that, you know, spectrum out and auctioned and licensed, you know, quickly.
Okay. We have a question in the back.
On the 5G topic, do you anticipate getting additional sources of revenue from other smart devices that could come on board, and like such as healthcare could be one or another area?
For sure. Yeah, I think healthcare, smart cities, smart buildings, and vehicles are all opportunities, right? Like the, you know, the biggest advantages of 5G are obviously, you know, huge bandwidth, and that's important for many different consumer applications. But one of the biggest benefits is a very low latency in the network. So in other words, the time for the network to respond, that's incredibly important for IoT applications and whatnot. Like, so you think of something like connected car and autonomous car driving, like that's definitely something that you want to have very low latency in the network when you're going 100 kilometers an hour down the highway and someone runs in front of you. You want a fast responding network. So I think, you know, any applications that rely heavily on data back in the cloud and need constant and aware, constantly aware devices of where they are, you know, from a location-based standpoint, that constantly are communicating back with that data in the cloud, because that's where the artificial intelligence operates to, you know, operate whatever that particular function is. Those are the ones that are going to kind of take off in a 5G environment. Are there additional opportunities there for us and for the industry as a whole? Absolutely, right? I think, you know, in the same way that, you know, exactly what those are and how they'll deploy, I don't know yet. Actually, what I do know is that as long as we remain nimble and focused on our customers, we'll be there and ready to deploy it. In the same way that if you go back, you know, 10 years ago and, you know, the early stages of data were deploying and the internet was just getting deployed and, you know, the most a smartphone could do at that point was take a picture of someone, you know, you wouldn't have been able to dream of all the different applications that are out there in the internet today that are used on a mobile phone today by customers, right? The ecosystem will figure out all sorts of creative and new and interesting ways to manage and monetize this technology. And, you know, as a carrier that, you know, has that network and is providing a quality experience on that network, will participate in that monetization process as it proceeds. Okay.
Switching to wireline, you're one of the few companies, telco companies out there that are both growing wireless, but also wireline, on both the top line and the bottom line organically.
Yep.
Can you explain why for TELUS that's something that can be continued going forward when other companies in your space are having issues on the wireline side? Is it an incumbency issue? Is it that you have growth opportunities in other fields, like you're investing in healthcare, you're investing in TELUS International? How can we see that continue going forward?
Yeah, I think it's actually both of those as we proceed. So yes, absolutely, kind of one of the fundamental strategic drivers of our business for many years is this being the concept of a kind of dual tenant around our dual growth engine in our business, where we wanted to kind of be growing not just wireless, but also wireline, you know, to a significant degree to fuel our bottom line growth. You know, it starts, I would say, with that network investment, right? No question. Like we're seeing, you know, very strong and continued success from the capital that we've been deploying into the fiber to the home, fiber to the premise, both on business and also definitely in consumer. And having a material element of your footprint now, like, you know, almost 50%, soon to be more than 50%, with fiber to the home, opens up a lot of opportunities, you know, for continued growth in the internet space or the broadband space. Layered on top of that is, you know, a lot of success we've had in recent years that we see continuing in the future in terms of, you know, continued penetration in the TV space, right? Like we went from a kind of standing start of not being in the TV space at all, you know, 6-7 years ago to, you know, having, you know, driven strong share and you know, over 1 million subscribers and customers in that space in a fairly short period of time, and you know, we still think there's headroom in terms of growing our share within the TV market as things progress. So all of those contribute to strong, sustained bottom line growth. I think significant investments in reliability, right, around our product set, both in terms of the reliability improvements that we're seeing as we drive out fiber to the home. It's a much more stable and reliable broadband network than copper has proven to be, as well as all the other investments we're making in digitization and making it easier to do business with is also helping us improve our cost structure in that wireline side of the business as well, which is also contributing to the bottom line side. And then when you move outside of kind of the core traditional telecom and broadband, side of the business, we're seeing continued strong growth in areas like health, as you mentioned, that are also, you know, helping fuel that bottom line growth. Healthcare is, one of the number one growing, areas and industries in North America. And we're a very active player in that space as the leading technology provider in Canada. And we see, continued growth on all kind of fronts, whether it be in, clinics with doctors, pharmacies, or with governments. We were just, named to help roll out the latest government e-prescribing network at the federal level, and numerous successes in different provinces around it that are all helping fuel bottom line growth as healthcare expands. So
I get asked a lot of questions on healthcare, but I have to go with the data that the companies provide, and we have very little in terms of disclosure from TELUS on the size of the healthcare business, its growth. Is there a time when you can start providing information on profitability, on revenue metrics that can?
Well, not today.
Not today? how big the business has to be before you can split it out and start to provide the disclosure on that?
Yeah, I don't actually, I actually don't think we've publicly said, it has to get to a certain size. What I can tell you is we're extremely happy with both the top line and bottom line growth that we're seeing in that space. We continue to invest heavily in that space, and we're seeing very strong organic growth as well as continued kind of small acquisitions to help bolster that organic growth. And it's a meaningful contributor to our bottom line growth performance on a year-over-year basis, and has been for the last couple of years, and we see that continuing into the future. At what point will we get and start focusing on disclosure around it? Actually, I don't think internally we've kind of set a date or a size that around where we think that that's important to do.
Is it growing double digit? Can it?
It's growing very well, right? So
we're not getting anything today.
No. No.
So
I'm not going to be the first guy to cross that line.
On RGU growth, can you talk about TV? I mean, we're here. We see it in the statistics. TV is declining 1 to 2% in Canada, but as you said, you're gaining market share. Is there a point where you see TV becoming less of a growth driver for you, and then you have to focus more on other services to continue the growth in wireline?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, there's no question that, all good things come to an end, and eventually, right now, the share gains that we're getting are allowing us to offset what, any cord cutting kind of declines, right? And that's why we're positive in terms of overall TV nets and RGUs. We see that continuing for, a while yet. Eventually, our share start to taper off, share gains start to taper off, and we'll see that slow, steady decline on kind of the overall industry cord cutting as people migrate more and more to OTT video happen. That'll happen, but it's going to, we don't believe happen at anywhere near the clip, for instance, that cord cutting has happened on the NAL side of the home phone side of the business. And when it does, we believe there'll be other revenue opportunities or RGU opportunities that exist in other areas like, broadband continues to, grow, you know, exceedingly well for us. And as people move away from kind of a pay TV environment towards an OTT video environment, they end up, you know, like they're still watching lots of video, right? So that video has to go over something, and it's going over internet, and so it's offset by the fact that you know, they're upsizing in terms of the speed that they need into their home. So, you know, if you watched a lot of pay TV before, you were probably okay with a 50 meg service, right? But as you know, go to OTT only and don't watch as much pay TV anymore, then you need more of a 150 meg service, or, you know, even higher in the future. So that's also an offsetting factor, where I might not have that TV RGU in the future, but I need a bigger broadband pipe to support the video viewing habits that I still have, right, in the home. And then, you know, as that progresses, we believe there's other areas like connected home, managed security, and other services that, you know, will naturally come in to replace that. Healthcare services around, you know, consumer health solutions into the home, and monitor, you know, home health monitoring and whatnot, that also will be contributors as people, you know, want to make sure that, you know, multiple different devices are monitored and protected inside their home. All of those will help be offsets to that, you know, the traditional kind of pay TV side of things as that drifts down.
Okay. We have seen quite significant price increases on internet in Eastern Canada this year versus previous years. Can you talk about the price elasticity in Western Canada on internet and also on wireless? Just are you seeing any kind of pushback? Well, we're seeing it in the press, the pushback from consumers, but are you seeing it in actual action by consumers as they see those price increases coming in year after year?
Yeah, not unduly so. I mean, the price increases in Western Canada haven't been as aggressive as they have been in Eastern Canada, so it's a little bit hard to say. But no, we've not, you know, I mean, consumers don't enjoy price increases at all. But I think the price increases that we have done have not been met with any significant opposition from our customers, because they've been predominantly focused on broadband. And I think consumers understand that they're using broadband more and more and more. You know, like the analogy I often use is electricity, right? Like as I said before, our consumers are literally using, you know, twice as much data almost every 12 months, right? It varies between, you know, 12 and 18 months. But if you, you know, on a year-over-year basis used twice as much electricity, you know, you wouldn't expect your electricity bill to not go up, right? You wouldn't expect it to only go up by $5, right? And yet, you know, those are the sorts of price increases that we've been driving, and they've been mostly in broadband, in areas where we're having to make massive capital investments in our network, not just on fiber to the home, but also on our core, to support what are incredibly, you know, significant you know, usage increases as people are using more and more internet on a regular basis. So, you know, it's a service that's getting used a lot more than it was a year ago, and a lot more than it was 2 years ago, and way, way, way more than it was 3 years ago. It's natural to expect that, you know, service is going to cost more money. The price increases, as much as they've seemed significant to consumers and are significant to consumers, pale in comparison to the usage increases. Which, you know, so that if you look at it on a cost per megabyte basis, that is you know, like declining massively, yeah. Right? In both wireless and wireline, even more so in wireline, right?
Maybe we can finish off the presentation by talking about dividend policy and leverage. Where do you see leverage being in the next couple of years? Just talk about capital payback and deployment.
Yeah, so I mean, our TELUS has a strong track record of continuing to grow our dividend, right? We're now in our kind of third 3-year tranche of you know, consistent and committed growth in the dividend. We went through, you know, 10% growth for 2011 to 16. Last year, you know, we announced a dividend growth commitment around for another 3 years from 17 through 20 of, you know, between 7 and 10%. We're going to be committed for the foreseeable future at driving that dividend growth, and know that it's very important to our investors and our shareholders. So that it kind of starts with that, right? And then we back out everything else beyond that. Okay, so after that dividend growth, what is left in terms of investments back into the rest of our business? We're going to put a priority on things that drive the customer experience and continue to improve our network, hence why we've made the focus that we have on things like fiber to the home and largest and fastest mobile network. We remain comfortable that, as we forecast out what we're going to have to spend over the next 3 to 5 years, that we can maintain that dividend growth model, meet our commitments around leverage ratio going forward, and slowly reduce our capital expenditures. And that's why, our targeted capital expenditures this year, $2.85 billion, roughly just over a 20% CapEx intensity, and that's down from last year, I think around 23%, almost $3.1 billion. So we feel the main driver of that capital expenditure for the last number of years has been the fiber build. And as you pointed out before, we've kind of peaked at that, and we see that in a slow decline over the next 3 to 5 years going forward. And that allows us then to continue the investments that we've continued to make in places like healthcare and whatnot, as we go forward and still meet dividend policy and leverage ratio guidelines. So,
great. Okay. Time flies. Next year we'll schedule two presentation slots for you guys. We have too many
Thanks.
Questions. Thank you everyone for coming. And next presentation is actually on the second floor with Stingray, not here.